Welcome to GT Radio, and I'm your host, Tino Magneta. And today we have a very, very interesting guest. His name is Chris Jenner. And Chris
Jenner
has
that's very nice.
You like that?
Yeah. It's very descriptive. Very good description.
You got that smooth jazz kind of feel coming in there, right?
Exactly.
How are you, Chris?
I am doing well. And how about you?
Good, man, good. So just to tell our listeners that Chris heads up the digital marketing strategy for Sleeping with Achievement. And, you know, Chris, you and I are going to talk about something that is both very close to our hearts, and we're very passionate about it, and that's email marketing. And it seems like every time we get together, we just spend a lot of time talking about it. So I said, you know what? I'm going to have the guy on my show and let him speak his mind because he has a lot to say. Is that right?
Exactly. And I definitely appreciate it. So looking forward to jumping into it. And you know me, I love to talk. So this is perfect.
Yeah, and so do I. So it'll be a lot of talking. And it is talk radio, right? So I think that's okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. So before we get into, like, you know, your history, I wanted to kind of preface the show talking, you know, there's always, it seems like with email marketing, everybody doesn't really know the facts about it. And in terms of your whole digital marketing department, you have, you know, online advertising, you have behavioral targeting, you have social media, you have all these things. And you have email marketing, which basically is the granddaddy of digital marketing. Tell me the power of this tool.
Sure, yeah, and definitely. I mean, email is clearly the foundation. You have to have email to do anything on the internet. In fact, to even sign up for the internet, you're going to get an email address. But pretty much anything you want to do out there, you've got to have that as a communication vehicle, and so it's ubiquitous. It's there. It's like it's breath, it's air in the internet, if you will. You need it to survive. And so because of that, and because people have, you know, it's what everyone started off with. It's how we began communicating on the internet back and forth. And so since everyone has it, it's just a great channel to leverage to get the word out about certain things because everyone's used to it. And, you know, the other piece about it, there's less restrictions on it, you know, using that as a channel than you do through other channels. So think about mobile text messaging. I mean, there are, A, people don't want to get their marketing messages via text, but B, there are some strict laws around marketing through text. Same thing with, ironically, fax machines. There are just laws that have very big teeth behind them. Now, granted, there's laws with email as well, but it is much less restrictive and much more capable, if you will, as a channel than others. And like I was saying,
also you're okay with getting advertising and marketing in your email, right?
Yeah, exactly, and that is the one thing. It's most consumers, 72% of consumers say that email is actually their preferred marketing channel. So those are people who raise their hand and say, you know what, if you're going to market to me through email, because that's a channel that people have 100% control over. You can set up folders, you can sort by name, you can do all these things to curate your inbox. And that is why people like email as a channel. That's why things have popped up like Unroll Me, where you sign up for the service and it helps you even better curate your inbox. And so due to that fact, 72% say that is their number one channel. But you got to figure there's a bunch of others who are like, sure, it's not my preferred channel. Perhaps they like a phone call or, you know, radio spots or things of that nature. But it's still an acceptable channel, so much so it's hands down the most effective and efficient direct marketing channel available. You know, 91% of people check their email every day on their phone. So you got to figure it's 99% probably that are checking email every day. I know I'm I'm in it every minute. Who are we kidding? But, yeah, it's just a great channel for reaching out to people. It converts amazingly. And it's you know, there have been over the years conversations about, oh, email's dead or email's dying. I remember Facebook was going to come out with the email killer. And none of that's ever come to fruition because, again, the history of email, it's been there since the beginning, and everyone knows how to make it their own. And so it's just it's a very powerful channel, which is ironic.
It just ROI, it's also way up there, correct?
Oh, totally, yeah. From an ROI perspective, it's obnoxiously effective. In comparison, you got to look at what are your other direct marketing channels. You can use direct mail, which every single piece you're going to send out, you got to drop a postage stamp on it. So you're looking at, you know, if you bulk mail, third class, you're probably looking at, you know, 25 to 30 cents per piece. You send a first class or what is it now, 49, 45, I don't know, I should know that number. But whereas with an email, it's, I don't want to go as far as to call it free, but it's a very inexpensive channel to get your message out.
And by
and
no
so, yeah,
means
you're
saying that direct mail is not effective. It's very effective. And we're going to come back to that. So let's start now. Let's go back to a little bit of the history. Because when you and I spoke recently, you told me a great story that you actually started, being interested in the internet through your father's business, right? Your father's
correct.
Business,
yeah.
Right?
So, yeah. I got on the internet around 1995. I remember it distinctly because my old college roommate, I had come back to go visit him, and yes, I graduated before 95, so I'm old for all those youngins who are listening in right now. But anyway, so I got on the internet in 95, and I started looking at things and playing around and saw this amazing world that was on the internet, because now I'm really going to date myself. Prior to that, in the 80s, I was actually online with a 9600 baud modem on my Commodore 64, dialing into BBSs. Those are bulletin board systems. It would be one computer calling another computer, and effectively you would just go in and type messages on a virtual bulletin board. Then you would log off, wait a few hours, log back in, and see who's responded to your post. It was, you know, we were some crazy nerds back in the day. And so, anyway, when the internet came about in the mid-90s, I was like, this is amazing. Look at this. We can all be on at the same time, and there's pictures, and there's, you know, granted, it was slow. I was on a 2088 modem at the time. But anyway, I got into, you know, started looking at what is this, how is this being displayed, and I started figuring out HTML and viewing source code and things of that nature, and I was like, man, my dad, my parents own a manufacturing business, and I knew that my dad's main source of driving business was advertising and paper magazines. It was going to actual trade shows and having to meet people and people coming around and, oh, let's see your products. Oh, I'd like to buy some, so on and so forth. And I was like, Dad, I've got to get you a website. I'm going to build you a website. My dad is stubborn. So anyway, long story short, I built him a website. He didn't it took me a while through his stubbornness to finally talk him into buying a computer. No lie. Got him to buy a computer so he could actually see what was going on his website and realize that he's getting some emails and things of that nature. And effectively within about probably less than 18 months of launching that website back in 96, all of his business came 100% through his website, and it's that way today. And so it saved on tons of expenses and him having to go to these trade shows and so on and so forth. And, so that is how I got.
So that's how it started. That's how you got the bug. And
yeah.
So after that, I know you worked at an agency for a little bit, but the real adventure came when you got hired at the Hilton, right? And what year
correct.
Was that?
Yep, so Hilton Worldwide, I started with them in 2001. And
so now
so
that
they brought
part of it to me is really fascinating because just so our listeners can know, when Chris started at the Hilton, they were making almost zero revenue, and he took it from zero revenue to $250 million in revenue. So this is an incredible story over the span of 10 years. And tell us what it was like there when you started and what you began to do, how you built this out.
Sure. Yeah, and so it's still the early days of email marketing. Prior to Hilton, I had done some email marketing with a telecommunications company, but very rudimentary. Moving to Hilton Worldwide with such a huge reach afforded a lot of opportunity. So when I started, there were only two text-only emails that were being sent out, and as you referenced, making hardly any money. After 10 years, you know, before I moved on to a different role within Hilton, it was up to a little over $250 million a year. So how I got there from a text only to $250 million a year was really playing with the channel. It's figuring out, you know, what could be done in the email channel. How do we make it more effective? How do we make it more engaging? How do we get to the right people? And so first started off with enhancing things, doing creative tests, developing creative that people wanted to see in their inbox. And then from there, it was moving into, okay, where are these opportunities that we're missing? How do we get that business from? We have to ask them for the sale. I had a boss at the time who we were sending a statement for the loyalty program when we got to that stage. And with the statement, there were no calls to action in it. It was just, oh, you had this many stays, and here are the number of points you have, so on and so forth. I had to actually talk him into allowing me to put some marketing in there, a call to action, book now. And that took that email overnight from making, I want to say it was pulling down $30,000 every time we'd send it. Because, of course, there were some links in there, of course, link back to your account,
sure,
things of that nature.
Yeah.
As soon as I put a call to action in it, it shot up to over $1 million every time we sent that campaign. And now, granted, I'm
that
not
opened your
say
eyes.
That,
it opened everybody's
yeah,
eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, that wow, this is a channel that can really drive some business.
Just so our viewers are clear, Chris, back then, this was unheard of. What you did,
right,
the Book Now thing, it was now it's like commonplace. Everybody was, yeah, you got an email that says Book Now, just click here. But back then, nobody had ever thought of that. It was like, you know, Golly and I sent out the first email on the strip from the Flamingo, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was huge. And that was because nobody had gotten an email before. And,
right,
and so they were welcoming this new tool. So just so everybody knows out there, we see this as commonplace now, but back then it was revolutionary, correct?
Exactly, yeah. Because the modus operandi back then was, oh, we're going to send newsletters. We're just going to send people information. This is a channel through which we want to engage people. And here's what's going on in the world. Oh, we have some new hotel opening. We have it versus a, let me sell you something. And so, yeah, that was,
yeah.
And that's why there was so much pushback from leadership at the time. Like, no, this really isn't the place we need to be hitting people up for money.
Why do you think there was the pushback? Or was it just because they couldn't? The power of the tool, or was it just because?
Yeah, I think it was just you don't do that in email. I mean, that was the general feeling. It was like email isn't for communicating business back and forth. It's for sharing information. It wasn't thought of as a channel through which you could monetize at the time, and so that that changed pretty quickly.
Yeah, when they saw those numbers.
Precisely. Exactly. And then
did they ask you if you could do it every day?
Yeah, exactly. Can we send this every day? No. That is pretty funny. But but one thing it did afford is now suddenly it's a channel that's making money. Therefore, hey, let's invest in this. Let's start, you know, throwing a little bit more money Jenner's way and see what he can do with it. And so it allowed me to get
a team. Then?
It allowed, yeah. And so what we were able to start doing then is getting outside of, and again, this is the old shotgun blast days. So we're just sending emails to people who have said, yeah, I want to hear from you. But then instead of the shotgun blast, I started heading down the path of, because, you know, my pedigree is in direct marketing, and direct marketing is all about targeting. And so moving that same idea of direct mail targeting into the world of email. And so how did we, you know, make sure that we're getting that right offer to someone? So looking not only at their explicit preferences, you know, developing a preference center, those are some of the things that, of course, came out of it, asking people, what do you want to hear about? But then also tying in data that I had through web analytics to see, okay, you told me you're interested in receiving information about coming, you know, going to Hawaii, but I actually see you out there searching or booking with regularity trips to Boston and New York and things of that nature. So I would tie in all that information to ensure that I'm getting you offers that, yes, that you wanted to hear about, but also that you didn't tell me you wanted to hear about, but I see that you're interested in that region, so let me pop some offers there. And so it was just a way to effectively start building a CRM engine through the email platform.
So
and,
how far are we into it now? Are we in year five, or where are we now in the Hilton?
That is a fine question. We're probably year 5 to 7, somewhere in that range. Probably closer to 5. And
right.
Yeah, so
and what happened after
building
that?
Building out that customization, and then it really just blossomed into, instead of there being, you know, particular singular senders, if you will, you know, we're sending from a brand, it started opening up into how do we let's start expanding this to giving properties the ability to do some messaging and so on and so forth. And really it was just a matter of growing it to having the loyalty program be part of it, the brands part of it, so on and so forth. It was just expanding it to all the key teams who could leverage the database and the ability to do targeted, customized messaging.
How many people did you end up on your staff when you left? How many did you have?
When I left, there were about 30 team members across, I want to say 5 teams. I had a team in Glasgow, I had 3 teams in Beverly Hills, 2 teams in Dallas, so I guess that's 6 teams.
Just so our viewers can understand that, you know, this medium is so powerful that it actually needs teams of people, right, to do things to it and to analyze and to segment and to, there's a lot of stuff going on, correct?
Exactly, and that is always one of my pet peeves, because a lot of people who aren't familiar with the email marketing channel and what goes into it think, oh, I have Outlook, I send emails all day. What are you talking about? Why does that take you so long to go from point A to point B? And because there is a lot involved. There's the coding of the actual email itself. There's the obtaining the data. There's assigning the data to that email, because if you want to go data-driven with your communications, then you're going to need that connection as well. There's the whole proofing and QA process, because how many times, I mean, it happens every so often. We see an email come through without a subject line, or it says test, or it says dear first name. You know, it's
right.
Doing our best to make sure those don't get out in the public all that often.
Correct. And then there's the post-analysis and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
Deciding what you're going to be doing after, et cetera, et cetera. So am I right to say you did real good at the Hilton, right?
Yeah.
Do they have, like, a statue for you there or something? No, always. This guy made it so much fun.
Ironically, just the opposite. Just the opposite. They're like, get out of here, you annoying guy. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, no.
So you cut your chops, then. You were very innovative. You cut your chops. You did some great things. And then the Caesars gig came along, right?
Yep. So then moved to Caesars. Who needed that?
What year was that? Yeah, what year was that?
Caesars was 3 years ago, so 2014. Okay. Is that right? Yeah, 2014. 13 or 14.
Was there something in between Hilton and Caesars?
Yeah, but we don't need to go into that.
Okay.
It was a golf company. It's not all that.
Okay.
Thing,
so. You play golf?
No.
Okay, enough said about that.
That was the ironic part. I don't play golf, but I mark
part.
It really well. But
so let's
yeah, so anyway.
What
Caesar,
was
yeah,
when you first got there?
Sure. So Caesars, the reason they hired me, they needed someone who knew the email channel and knew how to make it, make the most of it, because Caesars at the time was, and still is, a direct mail, do a lot of direct mail, as does the casino industry in general. Direct mail is a solid performer for casinos. And what Caesars was looking for, our CMO at the time, really wanted to transition over to digital as much as we possibly could. And in fact, at one point, there was actually a mandate that we are going to be 100% digital by this particular date. And mm-hmm. so what they wanted was someone like me who could come on board and help transition from direct mail to email, because I'd done that at Hilton. Because at Hilton, we had, used to do a bunch of direct mail, and then I weaned us off that and moved Hilton to 100% digital. But coming to Caesars to do that, their direct mail program runs circles around any other industry I've ever worked in. Telecommunications, I was with Franklin Covey for a while, did a lot of direct mail, so on and so even that golf company did a lot of direct mail. What I've seen being done in the casino industry, particularly, of course, Caesars, because that's one I see, it runs circles around anything else I've ever seen. So transitioning from direct mail to email presents itself with quite a bit of a challenge, because it's so effective, direct mail, that there is a fear of, well, God, I don't know if we want to try and transition people over to direct mail, or I'm sorry, to email, because what if we lose out? The beautiful part about email is it's inexpensive and it's easy to test, and you get responses very quickly. And so we're able to do some tests and, still send some direct mail, but then move some folks over to email and see how that performs and so on and so forth.
Now, let's make one thing clear. By no means, and you and I have talked about this before, by no means do you or I preach that someone should stop, that email replaces direct mail. In other words, they work hand in hand, right? Like a bassist to a drum, right, in a band.
Definitely. They are extremely complementary, be it in multiple ways. Complementary in that you can send someone a direct mail piece and follow it up, or lead in with emails, lead in and follow up a direct mail piece with emails to help support that. But then you also have situations where maybe I've got too big of a database, so I need to find the people for whom, okay, I know direct mail really works well with these people, therefore I'm going to continue direct mailing them, but then I'm going to supplement the rest of the audience with email and do that. So, yeah, they definitely work hand-in-hand in multiple ways. Both are extremely powerful, and they're even more powerful together. But one of the key pieces...
The conversion rate is different, right? So you need more on the email side. The conversion rate is different, right?
Correct, and that's exactly what I was just going to go to, is that
perfect.
Email and direct mail are not the same channel, and that's a lot of times where people fall down when they say, oh, I want to transition certain audiences over to direct mail, I'm sorry, to email from direct mail, is that they think, oh, well, I send one direct mail piece a week, I'm now going to send one email a week and expect the exact same response. Well, as we know, direct mail has a very long shelf life. Think about all of our Bed Bath & Beyond 20% off coupons that are sitting on our countertop, waiting for us to, oh, is it time to go to Bed Bath? And, do I need something? Oh, I better bring my coupon. Those have a shelf life of weeks, if not months, that they sit out there, where an email, if that's in my inbox, within 15 minutes, it's down below the fold, and I'm never going to see that email again. So you've got a very short window in which to engage people. Then I'm going to open up that email. Let's say we'll go with that Bed Bath example. Oh, look, they gave me a coupon for 20% off. Yeah, I'm not doing something right now. Therefore, I'm going to delete this. Maybe I'll come back to it later, which I may or may not do. And so with email, you really need to have multiple touches. You need to be able to, you know, follow up with people. Look at, did they open? Did they click? You know, all these different types of things you can do to follow up at the right time to ensure that you have that same longevity that you would with a direct mail piece, but it's going to take you 5 to 10 emails where a DM piece would only take one. Now, again, back to the whole cost thing, if it's all about numbers and people are out there number crunching, I can send 10 emails for still a minuscule fraction of what just the postage alone on a DM piece would cost. But again, there are strong advantages to direct mail, but email is also what I do. So I have a
conversion rate is different too, right? So with the emails, you need to send out a lot more emails to make it up, or like you said, multiple emails,
correct,
10 to 1,
exactly,
or something
you need
like
to
that.
Follow
so the
up
conversion and, rate, right?
Yeah. So yeah, your conversion rate does drop quite a bit, but then it makes up, you know, in mass, if you will, when you send the multiples.
And the ROI, of course, on email is a lot higher just because, what's the reason behind that?
Because, so let's say I send a direct mail piece and I send an email piece, let's do a 50-50 split. Direct mail drives $100,000 in revenue. Email drives $60,000 in revenue. I'm just making this up. I spent, to get that $100,000, I probably had to spend $40,000, $50,000. Let's even just say $10,000 to run that direct mail piece. So I got a 10 to 1 ROI. Well, with that email, while I only made $60,000, it cost me $27.82. I mean, the difference is that dramatic between the two. And so the ROI is in the thousands.
It's nothing. It's almost free.
Right. Yeah, it is an extremely inexpensive channel. And that's why it affords you to, you know, instead of just sending that one email, like the one direct mail piece, it's best if I send an email and a follow-up and another follow-up and get it at that right cadence so people finally get that message at the right time for them. They may be deleting it, you know, oh, not interested right now, but then, boom, I finally got them with send number 7 or whatever that is. But I can afford to send 10 times where I can't afford to do the same in direct mail.
Now, would you say the shelf life of an email is how long?
Email shelf life, so it depends on which shelf we're talking about. But usually all of the engagement in an email, open and click, 95% of that occurs within 48 hours, 48 to 72 hours, and then it's got an extremely long tail. But 95% within that 48 to 72 hours. And speaking of that long tail, it was funny. We were just looking at some results. Was it this morning or yesterday, where we saw that there are some emails that are still generating business that were sent in 2015. So some people do save some really old emails, and they end up clicking into it again and converting. That's an anomaly, of course, but it is a very long tail. But that big initial 95% within 48 to 72 hours. And then the other piece I was thinking through is that whole inbox. If I can't get you with my subject line and get you to open that email, it's probably like an hour and a half long shelf life for people like me who are getting tons of emails every day, which is the vast majority of us, because it just goes down and gets forgotten. So you're kind of dealing with two shelf lives. You've got your subject lines you've got to worry about, but then the content itself, you've got about 48, 72 hours with an email.
Right. So it's quick. Now, I remember us talking a little bit, and you know, I've experienced this too. The other beautiful thing about email, and again, we're not saying that direct mail works great, but email kind of takes the chains off the marketing department because they can experiment since and that's a function of the cost, right?
Exactly, and the function of the cost as well as just the utility of the tool itself, and that it send immediately. You know, a million emails can be deployed at once, and they all arrive, you know, at someone's inbox within a certain amount of time, barring any, you know, server-side issues. And so you start seeing results immediately with email, whereas with direct mail, you got to worry about, you know, I got to use a special phone number and, you know, so on and so forth. How do I measure? Where email is almost instantaneously measurable. And a lot of times we see that, particularly when we're doing subject line tests, is we can let an email steep for maybe 2 hours, granted, a minimum. Ideally, we let it sit for 24 to see how the opens were. But within about 2 to 3 hours, you've got a pretty good read on which subject line is performing better. You know, when you're looking into actual conversions, you're going to need a little bit more time. But, yeah, you can get to that whole shelf life of being so short, that affords a lot of opportunity with testing, because I've got to read within a couple of days to know here's how it's performing. Now let me deploy the remainder of the audience. What was the winning creative offer, subject line, whatever?
Yeah. Right. And so you can do a lot more experimenting, and you can basically do whatever you want, because there's no such thing as making a mistake in terms of revenue, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, when the channel is so low cost, you can afford to try some things that, you know, wouldn't be possible if you had to deal with a certain amount of, you know, budget that, oh my God, it's going to cost me $20,000 to test this. I better really think through and do some prior research and so on and so forth. Versus email, we're like, let's see. Do we like this picture? Do we like that picture? Let's see which performs better. Do we like this call to action or that call to action? Let's give it a shot and send it out the door. So, it's a great channel for testing.
You can be much more experimental with an email channel.
Totally. And although, that being said, you know, I'd love to experiment. Remember back in the day when you could actually send flash and videos in email?
Yeah,
and then,
flash, you could do anything.
Yeah, now email is extremely limited. But I also think that's one of the reasons why it's continued to do so well and why it's become people's preferred channel, is it cuts out all that excess, if you will, the things that are going to make your inbox heavy or slow things down. You know that when you get an email, it's going to be fairly streamlined because there's not much that can be done. You can use an animated GIF, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's not so rich that it's going to jam you up.
Exactly. Yeah, I remember we used to put JavaScript in emails. That'll get flagged as spam.
Well, we did some campaigns where you could actually put video, and when you opened your email, the video would start playing right away.
Yeah.
And you get like a 30-second commercial. So I'm sure it was jamming up a few email browsers. You were talking a little bit about you know, that email doesn't replace direct mail, but you were saying something about how you can get rid of some of the direct mail and just send them email. How do you determine that?
And I'm sorry, how do I what?
How do you determine who not to send direct mail to in the substitutes with email?
Sure. And that really, email is execution. So as far as the strategy of who's getting an offer, happens elsewhere in the organization, but effectively you go through and look at, okay, what can I anticipate? How much money could I anticipate? I'm JCPenney. I'm going to send out a catalog. I can anticipate if I send this catalog, or I know my customers, if I send it to these people in catalog form, I know I will make $200 per person off this catalog. It costs me 67 cents to send it. So that's a good return. Then you may have some other people, it's like, well, it cost me 67 cents. I know that they may or may not purchase. Not everyone's good for a purchase every time. So, and I would start filtering down through the value of my customers to determine, you know, who I should at least, if it's a sheer numbers game, let me peel back on these because it costs me more to market to them than it should. So then I would convert those over to email. Now, I don't want to say rudimentary, that's the smart way to start looking how to whittle down an audience of, okay, this is just expensive for me to do, therefore how can I make it less expensive? And here are the people that I am willing to take a risk with. So it becomes a risk-benefit
right.
analysis.
In our business, it would probably be looking at those lower tiers, right?
Exactly. So you're looking at your lower tier guests that, you know, those would be the ones that you would want to start with and say, hey, let me at least just dip my toe in the water. Because whether or not I send in the direct mail piece this month, it's not going to hurt. It's not going to break the bank if I don't get that business. So let me try this other channel. But then also I've got some savings by not sending as much, so on and so forth. So that would be the first. And then secondly, I would, if it were me, I would look at their, well, you'd have to run some tests and email and send both email and direct mail pieces. And whatnot. Just start looking how they perform. How do they behave? Are they actually opening and clicking on these emails? And look at the behavior. And I could then start to determine, oh, here is an audience that actually performs well when I send them an email. And so there's kind of the two-tiered approach to that.
Right. All right. This is great. I'm having a great time. Let's open it up to some questions here. So I see some numbers popping up here, so hang on one sec.
Very good.
Hello. Hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Who do we have here? Hello. Hello. I guess we don't have anybody there. Hang on one sec.
I think that was my mom calling in to
listen in.
Just to hang up on
good
me.
Boy.
Yeah.
Don't swear.
Don't swear on the radio.
Don't swear. Be a good boy. Hang on one sec. Hold on here. Hello.
Yeah.
Hang on one sec. Hang on one sec. Let's see who else we got here. A bunch of people here. Hang on. Okay. Hello, hello. GT Radio. Who do we have here? Hello. Oh, looks like everybody's on vacation today. I got people listening, but I can't help them talking. Hang on one sec. I'll go to the next one. Because I'm looking at all these numbers, and I'm just choosing here. Hello, hello, GT Radio. Who do we have here? Hello? Because I know there's a time delay, so
right.
I'm going to have to wait a second. Hello, hello, GT Radio. That's strange. Hello, hello, this is GT Radio. Actually, I was told there was a 30-second time delay, so let's just hang on here and see.
Oh, gotcha. It could take 30 seconds for people to want to dial in. Yeah. And plus,
Yeah, they've dialed in, but there's like a 30-second delay. Hello, hello. Hello. It's been 30 seconds, right? I think so.
I would assume so.
Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. Can you hear us? All right, let's try this.
Bueller.
Hello. Can you hear me now? Okay, let's try the next person here. Hang on. Let's see if we can. Hello, hello. This is GT Radio. Can you hear us? Hello, hello, hello. All right, well, let's stay on with this person. You and I can talk. And if they come on the line, then they can come on.
There we go.
How are you today?
Good. Tito, it's Ro.
Raul, how are you doing? Hello, right?
Yeah.
Good. Do you have a question for Chris?
Yeah, I do. Good interview, first of all. That was great. I guess my question is, for smaller properties that doesn't have a large database, obviously sure. We're not going to have a large, a file of emails. So how would you kind of go about your email campaigns when you know you have such a small amount? I know building your email bank is going to be important, but I just wanted to know Is there any good promotion? I mean, promotions to capture those emails? You know, and I know Tino knows a little bit about this as well, so I just wanted to get a little bit more input on for smaller casinos.
Sure, and I would say first, of course, first and foremost, I got to toss to Tino and GT Advertising to do an email append on your data. But outside of that, of course, I mean, at every possible touch point where you are interacting with that guest, you should find a way to solicit that email address. And as we shared earlier, you can't really do anything in this world anymore, at least online, without having the email address. So people have them. It's just a matter of finding that right way to obtain it. Now, I'm not a huge fan of buying them, if you will, by, hey, let me give you a free buffet if you give me your email address. I think people will, in this day and age, tend to give it up when asked for it in the right circumstance. You know, whatever they're doing, you know, they're doing something, get that email address. But as far as to the point of having a small list, small or large, I mean, that's sometimes we at Caesars even, we'll send emails that are to less than 50 people because they're so highly targeted. And that's it's definitely, you know, you slice and dice your audience how best fits your needs. And, definitely leverage that.
Chris, when you say, touch points, can you explain a little bit to Rogelio the touch points and also any programs like sweepstakes or, you know, sign up online? Explain a little bit about that.
Sure. So as far as just touch points, and I'm not familiar with what industry we're talking about here, but at least from
casino,
the user side,
industry.
Touch point. Okay, right. Casino. So, yeah, someone shows up to stay with you and they're checking in. Hey, can I get your email address? And I'm sure there's probably confirmation emails or things of that nature being sent. Now, if there's no hotel on site, it could be at the point of capture where I'm signing up for the rewards program. That should just be a given. You have to give your email address if you're joining our rewards program. At any point of sale where, again, where it makes sense and where the system can capture that information, capture it. You might even toy with having people with iPads walking around, depending on what's going on, and trying to get that information for – you have to figure out what makes sense. Because, again, if you're just walking around, hey, got to get your email address, no one's going to give it up. But if it makes sense with some sort of transaction that's going down, definitely I would recommend that. And then sweepstakes and things of that nature – you can use a sweepstakes to drive and obtain email addresses. That being said, I'll just share my experience with Hilton Worldwide. That was a big effort once, and we sure enough got a whole bunch of email addresses by running a sweepstakes. But when we looked at the average customer in the database, and I don't remember the numbers here, but I'm just going to make it up to illustrate, and it's probably fairly close to what it was. But I want to say the average customer was worth $250 a year, our average email address as far as sales. When it came to those captured through a sweepstakes, it was down to about $7.50. So a lot of times people are just playing sweepstakes to play sweepstakes, and they'll give you their information, but they're really not your customers. Your number one source are really your customers, how to get your own customers' information.
Cool. I had another one, Tino, if you want to come back to me or
yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay. I guess the other thing is we all know that, you know, most casinos like to rely on direct marketing, mail pieces. Why is it, do you think, and this can go for Tino if you want to chime in on there, why do you think most casinos are scared of using email? Is it because it's unknown? Is it because what would you say is the number one fear?
That is a really
great
good question. And I think that is the leading factor right there. It's fear because they know that direct mail works, and it works really well. It's a very powerful channel, and it has been driving amazing results for the casino industry since it began. So to take something, I mean, that's the equivalent when you think about it of, you know, I have I have a 911 Porsche, and I always win in a drag race. And so that's what I'm always going to use. And then someone comes up with this new electric car, and it's like, oh, you should really drive. No, I'm not comfortable. I know my 911 rocks. Little do you know, you hop in a Tesla S, and boom, you're going to smoke a 911. So it's one of those things. It's that comfort level, and to your point, that fear of the unknown, which is why really you need to, you know, if that is the what you're up against, it's talking into, let's dip our toes into this. And the key is you can't do a like-for-like replacement. I send one direct mail piece, therefore I'm going to send one email. You really need to think through what is the how many emails do I need to send to get that same effect? Because if you just do one for one, you're going to get beat every time.
Chris,
direct mail is
Chris,
powerful.
Expand on that a little bit. Make us understand better. So, you know, and we hear this a lot too. It's like they send that one direct mail piece, and then they send that one email, and they're comparing the results to that. Why is that not right?
Back to our point about the shelf life of an email versus a direct mail piece.
Email
is a is a flash in the pan, whereas direct mail is that's something people put on their counter. I do plan on going to Bed Bath & Beyond. I do plan on going there. I'm going to leave this, and it's going to stare at me and remind me every day, oh, yeah, I wanted to go there. And whereas email is gone in minutes.
Makes sense.
So what is the proper comparison? How do you compare one direct mail piece, and what are you doing in your email to make the proper comparison?
It all depends. I mean, every person's database and responsiveness and is going to be unique to that person. It's going to be through trial and error testing to figure out what is that right formula. Do I send an email, you know, at the same time I would have traditionally sent a direct mail piece? Do I send it much earlier? Do I send it much later? You know, there are a whole multitude of things that are going to depend, and truthfully it ends up a lot of times being on a person-by-person basis. So that is not a magical formula that I have.
You should also measure email over time, right, over multiple blasts, right?
Correct, yeah. I mean, that's an ideal way to make up for the fact that having a DMP sitting on my countertop look at me every day, can I do the same, have the same effect with putting an email in someone's inbox every day or every other day or once a week or whatever that cadence is to get to them? And then always the challenge, of course, with email is how much is too much? And that's something, again, that depends on different people. You know, you sign up for Groupon, they hit me once a day. I'm sure there are a lot of people who keep those Groupon emails and they keep on getting them once a day in their inbox. I'm not one of those people. But, so it all depends on – there is no magical answer there. It's just got to be through testing and trying things.
Sure. Great.
Sure.
Well, Helio, thanks. That was some really good questions. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, great question.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see if we can get these people that couldn't hear us to hear us. Here, we got one here. Hello, this is GT Radio. What do we have here? Hello, hello. Hello. I know there's a time delay because I've had a few people text me that they couldn't hear me after. You know, there was like a 60-second delay. So, yeah. Just hang on one second. Hello, hello, GT Radio. Can you hear me? All right, let's go to the next person. I'm gonna keep these open so that if they come on, they can talk. Hello, hello.
Hello.
This is GT Radio. Can you hear me? Hello. Who do we have?
Can hear you loud and clear. Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Hello. Okay. Question.
Question for.
Question,
yes.
Question,
go ahead.
Yeah. Chris, what do you think is the simplest email strategy that you can do to give you the biggest return on investment? Now, what can you do that gets you the biggest ROI?
I'll be honest with you, that answer is going to differ by what you're trying to accomplish. That's a tough one. But if your goal is to sell a widget, your best strategy to sell that widget via email is to put it out there. So try to sell the widget. The key things you need to be looking at, your subject line. So you need to have an engaging subject line that's going to make people want to open it. And then once you've got from that aspect, your email itself needs to be clear and to the point. People are only going to spend maybe 10 seconds scanning an email once they've decided to open it of, okay, here's what I've got in here. Why is this effective to me? And to that point, then, it becomes when you're looking to sell that widget, what is the key takeaway? What is that selling point, that key selling point for the widget? If, you know, you don't want to inundate them with too much information. It's get it to that,
right,
that sales pitch right there. Because, again, email is a extremely fast direct marketing channel. So get the message out there. Get people to open it. Once they open it, make sure it's got a clear, concise call to action with a reason for doing it. And that's what's going to drive you your best business. It's when people try to get all fancy and, oh, I'm gonna write a novel about this product. That's not email's job. Email's job is short, quick, and just give me a quick flash, a postcard, basically. What is this? I can either go click to a website to learn more or drive them straight into the purchase path.
So, Chris, what you're saying
is that
the simplest is the better, right? So if you're selling T-shirts and you want to promote your T-shirts, if I send an email and it says, click here and win a free T-shirt, that's good, right?
Yeah. I mean, if that's the what's going to motivate your audience, it's finding out what's going to motivate them. But then to that point about a T-shirt, if I'm selling T-shirts, my email should not open up with, you know, depends on what your audience is interested in. But I'm thinking it's not about the care instructions or it's 100% cotton or all those types of things that I really don't care about. I care what's on that T-shirt. Is it a stylish T-shirt or is it a funny T-shirt? You know, what is it about it that you're trying to sell me? And that's the key thing I should be looking at right there.
Right, and simple is better. One call to action is better than five, correct?
Correct. Now, granted, if you sell T-shirts and you also sell flip-flops and sandals and sundresses, I mean, T-shirt is your key message. Put that out there, and then you can have some secondary messaging in there. But you don't want to go beyond really four to five. And you don't want them all weighted the same. I mean, it should be a clear, here's what I'm talking to you about. Here's what I'm going to engage you with. Then you may get the looky-loos who later on are like, oh, yeah, I really like that T-shirt. But, oh, look, I didn't know they sold sandals. Click, and then they're buying some sandals too. So,
Right. Great. Thank you very much for calling in. Thank you. All right, let's see if we can get some other people here. Hang on one sec. Hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Hello, are you there? Hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Oh, I guess that person's not there. Hang on one sec. Let me go to someone else here. Hello. Nope, that's not happening. Let's see here. Hello. Welcome to GT Radio. Hello. Welcome to GG Radio. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to GG Radio.
Hello.
You have a question for Chris?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can.
So I wanted to ask you, this is Gali. I wanted to ask you about marketing automation and trigger campaigns and how are you guys doing that at Caesars and what do you think the impact of that is versus just the traditional, planning an email and sending it. So, for example, like
sure,
a new player program, things like that.
Yeah. So we are doing a lot of automation. The effect is that it helps because there are so many requests coming through. It helps ensure we can continue working on those needed custom builds, if you will. So the key thing I looked for in developing out that program was what are the types of campaigns that don't have a lot of variation from week to week, month to month? How can we get that into a automated fashion with particular data that feeds into the development process of that campaign. And so the triggers, automation, so on and so forth, have been developed out of there, and they perform well. And again, it helps relieve the burden, if you will, of the team. So now they have more time to spend building those customs, because you're never going to not need a custom build of a campaign. But anything that, you know, I would say anyone out there doing rinse and repeat campaigns, rather than build it time and time again, look for a way to automate that and save yourself some time to focus on the other efforts.
Chris, can you give us some examples of some of the stuff that you're automating and what people should be automating? And of course,
let me
explain to the viewer. Automation is when there's a preset time when the email should go out without the people having to set it up and send it out. Correct? That's what automation is.
Correct. Yep. So it is, and sometimes it's partial automation, but yeah. So automation, and rather than share what Caesar's, let me share some Hilton examples. So some key examples are, you know, you've got the monthly statement email that I was talking about with Hilton Honors. And so that goes out every month. We know it's going to go out on a particular time every month, and there is data that backs that up. And so what we did is built out here is the wireframe for this email. The information is going to plug in accordingly of what my account status is, how many points I have, so on and so forth. And then, you know, there are going to be some offers that rotate through dependingly. So like I shared, we did about three particular offers in that. And so that shell is ready to go. And so when this file gets dropped of everyone's monthly, what their prior month's activity was, it just basically drops into the system. And granted, you had to set everything up. And then that email just sends out, and no one has to touch it. It's already been reviewed and proofed and so on and so forth. So it cuts down on all that time and energy. Additionally, we had property-specific emails that we would do the same thing with. That we knew, you know, when the weather was nice in Hawaii, we would send out an email that it had already been pre-built, pre-approved. No one had to build anything except for that first time. And the data would say what the current temperature is and, you know, come to Hawaii, blah, blah, blah. But it would just make it so those types of campaigns that they were running again and again just to drum up business, hey, don't forget, Hawaii's out here, come and book, that we were able to fire those off. So when it came time to actually run a full-on promotion and Hawaii was developing things, we could actually spend the time and focus more on ensuring that custom build was tip-top and not being affected by all of these other little smaller builds, if you will, that we're able to easily automate.
Yeah, it takes the burden off the department, right? Because it's all automated.
Totally.
Yep. Yeah. And is it hard to do, or is it relatively simple? So if a casino is it just doesn't have much staff, is it something that's complicated?
And that all depends. I mean, depends on who the email service provider is and what their capabilities are.
Mm-hmm.
It can be as complex or as simple as one wishes to make it. I know that previously I had used Experian CheetahMail, and they had a kind of a plug-and-play utility where you could – create those types of things. And granted, this was, you know, six, eight years ago. So
right.
I'm
there's
assuming
a lot of
that functionality is still there. But there's, yeah, it's going to depend on which platform is being leveraged and so on and
yeah.
so forth. So, yeah, it could be complex, but it's worth the investment up front to plan out, okay, here is the format in which data is required every time. Here is the template that we've built. Here is the static information that goes in there. Here is the variable information that comes in from the data, and getting all that set up, approved, ready to go. And so, therefore, the next time it's just, oh, I need the data again in that particular format, drop it in here, boom, out the door.
Great. Thank you very much for calling in. So, Chris, let's talk a little bit about the future. You know, what in this space, what do you see? And of course, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But in terms of where everything's going and all the experience you've had through the years, for this platform and this medium, what do you see in the future?
Well, it has been fairly static for a while now. So I see it continuing down that path of just being the backbone of communications. Even though, like I shared, I mean, you always hear these, oh, you know, Twitter is going to be the next thing. Oh, Facebook is coming out with their new messenger. Oh, Google Plus is going to become the, you know, all these things were going to be the email killer. And oh my God, we have to worry. Email consistently remains the preferred channel of people to receive their communications. So I see it continuing. Now, what trends I have seen is that things do adjust over time. So as I shared, 91% of people are checking email on their phone every day. Now, I'm sure not all marketers are seeing that same level, but it's definitely more than people who are checking it on desktop. And so that's really where I see things moving toward, is thinking about email. When an email is designed, starting first with the mobile version, what do I want the mobile experience to be? Because that's what the majority of people are going to be seeing. And then from there, it's ensuring that all the subsequent, you know, actions that you want taken are also supported on mobile. And I mean, that's really the way the world is right now, is everything moving toward mobile. I would anticipate that we're going to start to, you know, how computers, it's like we've all pretty much moved to laptops now. There's going to be a next phase where everyone's moving to tablets. And then who knows where it goes beyond tablets. But it's smaller and smaller and more compact, yet more powerful. And so it's ensuring that everything being designed is being designed with the knowledge that it's going to a smaller screen, plan accordingly.
Right. So it's not necessarily, you know, it's not necessarily an advancement in the actual medium itself, but what's received. The meeting is being received on. Is that what you're saying? Optimizing it for smaller devices.
Optimizing imagine opening it on your phone, and that is
right.
That's where it's headed. I mean, that is the key. And then ensuring that this. And again, email. I didn't state this earlier, but email takes a village. Email doesn't really stand on its own. Where direct mail again stands on its own, sits on my countertop. I go and I do things. Email needs a website that I can link to for more information. Email needs potentially, custom audiences or things of that nature, where I'm messaging, I'm seeing other messages through Facebook, through Google, through whatnot, that are all supporting that same message. And so to the point of where email is, you know, actually it's technology itself is moving towards smaller screens and more compact and portable. Ensuring that not only the email, but all the subsequent where you're sending people, that village of, you know, that the email is part of, is also optimized for those channels.
Chris,
but
I
don't
really
see email changing.
Yeah, it's kind of static, like we were saying. But
but
good, effective. People understand it. They're used to it. It's not changing, but the receiving method is so you've got to make sure that you're optimizing it for those receiving methods.
Exactly.
Chris, it's been a great interview. Thank you so much. Will you come back on the show on a later date?
Oh, definitely.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. Can't thank you more. And everything you told us has been very knowledgeable, and I'm sure our viewers got a lot out of it. Have a good night. Have a good rest of your week. And we'll talk
very
to you
good.
Soon.
Very good. Thank you.
For our listeners, July 6th, we have Ernie Stevens Jr., who is the chairman of NYGA, and he's going to be talking about a lot of great things in the Native community. He's been the chairman of NYGA for over 17 years, and he's a very good friend, and he's a great, great man. His father was involved in the same kind of things that he's involved in, supporting Native nations. So we'll see you July 6th at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for listening. Have a great night.